helping you get to the back end of the work week. Welcome to the Hump Show on After Hours.
This is our middle show, and so we want to give you a little bit of something to shove you over the hump.
My hump, my hump, my hump, my hump. My hump, my hump, my hump. My humps, they got you.
I'm not sure I could do it without blushing. What does the song mean? My humps, they got you.
No one knows what it means, but it's provocative.
What you gonna do with all that junk? All that junk inside my trunk? My hump, my lovely lady hump.
Yes, it's Hump Show.
She's got me spinning.
Getting you to the good half of your week. It's the Hump Show on After Hours.
My humps, they got you.
That'll give you a little juice as you wake up on your Wednesday morning. It is our hump show. It's your hump day. Thanks for all your questions for Ask Amy Anything. We'll get to more of those, or I will. I don't think I'll have Manny do that. In fact, you need to log out of our social media there in the control room. That is my biggest fear, that when I allow, when I log into our different accounts in the control room and allow the fill-in producers to access them, that they will forget to log out, and then all of a sudden our accounts, my accounts, me, I am a sitting duck for people who decide they would like to prank me or prank us with our account. So it makes me pretty nervous. So I'm going to ask you to make sure you log out. So good morning to you on a Wednesday. Happy last day of July. What? This time tomorrow, are you ready for this? I will be saying to you happy August, number one. Number two, I will be saying to you later on today, we have our first preseason football game. That's crazy. Like, seriously crazy. The Olympics will continue on, but of course, football's all the rage. So it actually will be interesting. I will be looking up the viewership numbers and the ratings. And I know in every other case, what we've talked about with TV viewership has revolved around the WNBA in the last 4 months. But the NFL is back on the scene. And even though it's a Hall of Fame game, it's the first of the preseason games, there are very few people expected that will actually be starters for either the Browns or, no, I'm sorry, not the Browns, the Texans or the Bears. We're not going to see any of the Chicago starters, including Caleb Williams. Despite all of that, it's still the NFL.
Football season.
As Lamar Jackson indicates, it's August and it's football season. Now, how will the Hall of Fame game with very few starters compare to, are you ready for this? The all-around competition in women's gymnastics in Paris. And even though, now see, here's the crux of it. It's tape delayed. And people will already know what's happened for the most part if they choose to, or even if they don't, if you open up your phone or your device or any type of a web page on Thursday during the day, you're likely to see the results of the all-around, which includes both Simone Biles and Suni Lee. So if it's tape delayed and you can catch it online, are people still likely to choose the NBC primetime coverage of the Olympics over the Hall of Fame game? So I will be anxious to see what the numbers are, because I'm continually blown away by the power and the draw of the NFL. Even something as dumb as fake football, but all of the Hall of Fame, as I say, the Hall of Fame venue, and this particular game is the start of what is an iconic weekend always. And so, yeah, I'll be interested. But I do know that given the popularity of this USA women's gymnastics squad and the star power that was on hand Tuesday to watch them capture gold, to, let's say, cap their redemption tour. Remember, without Simone Biles in Tokyo, they did finish with the silver, and Suni Lee was the individual all-around champion. She will try to defend that gold medal coming up on Thursday. But it ended a streak of golds for them. So here they call this their redemption tour. And then Simone Biles, after the gold medal, had another name for the team. But it was their redemption tour. And they were brilliant. Really didn't give an inch. In fact, outperformed their qualifying, similar to the U.S. men in capturing the bronze on Monday. It was dynamic. If you haven't seen the routines, they're all up on YouTube. But I really enjoyed watching, even though I knew the results, I really enjoyed watching how it played out inside the arena. I don't want to say in real time, but enjoyed watching the reactions of the families and the crowd, the USA flags everywhere, the chants of USA, the smiles and the celebrations of the women that really echoed the men. And considering what they have come back from, both Simone and what happened in Tokyo and being out of the being out of not just the Olympics, but out of gymnastics for a while, getting married. She says, I have a husband and I have a dog now. And so things are just not the same. Yeah, our dog made a cameo on Tuesday's coverage. And then...
Not a baby, a dog.
Well, yeah. She's got still a lot of competitions ahead. She's not mentioned retirement that anyone has heard. And then for Suni Lee, who dealt with major illnesses because of kidney challenges, and it took a while for them to get the medication right. And so she was out of the Olympics. Well, not out of the Olympics. She was out of gymnastics for quite a while and made it a goal to get back in to Olympic shape and elite status. So it's the same group with Jordan Chiles and Jade Carey that won that silver in Tokyo, but they wanted the gold and they captured it in a powerful way. And it wasn't easy. That's the thing. If you just see the scores and you see the final celebrations and you see the smiles and them running around with the flag and then posing on the top of the podium as the anthem is played and they've got their gold medals, I mean, you would think, hey, 5-point win, they crushed it.
Yeah, and we did it.
And they did do that, except that it wasn't easy. There were moments where they had to rally. There were moments where they had to pick each other up. There were moments where they felt like they had let their team down. Now, they did have a nice cushion. But, yeah, to see them fight through adversity, I think, is so critical for any team that's going to excel and finish on top. So, for instance, Jordan Chiles fell off of the balance beam when she first tried her mount. So she uses the springboard, she gets up, and then boom, goes off the other side. So she fell right away, but had to get back on that beam and do the rest of her routine, which was relatively flawless. But she was real disappointed. She took herself away from the rest of the team and was upset. Simone didn't like how her floor exercise went. She actually rolled her eyes in the middle of it when she stepped out of bounds. So she wasn't thrilled, though at that point, the gold medal was theirs. I'm trying to think, Suni Lee, she got out of position on the uneven bars and had to save her routine. And so she also wasn't thrilled with her score. But they fought through the adversity, they picked each other up, and I love the joy.
I'm so happy right now.
I love the teamwork, the camaraderie, and how just like the men, they jumped up and down and screamed and yelled for each other, even as they were going through these four different rotations. So it was great to watch the family reactions, including Simone's husband, Jonathan Owens, who's a Bears safety. He did make it to Paris. He and her parents were keeping score. They had all their notes on a piece of paper, which was awesome. You had Suni's sisters there in hand, and Jade Carey's parents, and the reunion too. I gotta say, I love Jordan's parents. The way that her dad just brings so much energy and pounding his chest and yelling for his little girl, and you can see where she gets her energy and her spirit from. So it was awesome. Again, highlights are up on YouTube. I encourage you to watch them. It was really a coronation and a return to Olympic glory for this group that in Tokyo, it didn't play out for them the way that they wanted, but Simone certainly back on top, and now 8 medals, which is the most, a lot of them gold, the most for any American gymnast, and she was beaming after the fact. And in fact, after a lot of her routines, she was thrilled as well, too, just knowing what she'd been through, and now she's back to this incredible form.
I mean, we've all been through a lot. We all have our own stories to talk about. But most importantly, we got the job done. We're super excited to go and celebrate with our families. And we couldn't ask for any more from our performance tonight. We showed them that we can do it with the proper training, mentally and physically. Yeah, we did it.
So the Americans beat Italy by nearly 6 points. And then Brazil claimed the bronze. First time since 2016 they've had the gold in this team championship, this team final, and it was awesome to watch it play out. As for Simone, she'd been dealing with the calf injury. Not a big deal. Didn't notice that it bothered her in any way. Do you know that during her floor exercise, which again was the last one of anybody who was competing last night, or it was last night, yesterday, anybody who was competing, her floor routine was the last one. At one of the peaks of her tumbling runs, she got up to 11.8 feet. Well, 0.8, 11 feet, 8 inches. Her head was at 11 feet, 8 inches. She was nearly 12 feet in the air on one of her tumbling runs. So she, I mean, obviously an incredible athlete, the power and the explosiveness there, but also the bravery and the courage, the fearlessness, her degrees of difficulty. Same thing with Suni, even Jade Carey on her vault. Their routines are so much more difficult than a lot of the rest of the world that even when they do step out of bounds or fall, as much as it's disappointing, they still do have a great margin for error because they pack these routines with so many difficult elements. And she has elements named after her in nearly every apparatus and every area of the sport. So it's pretty incredible. So she partners with Jordan Chiles and Suni Lee and Jade Carey, and then Hesley Rivera, who is the 16-year-old who did not compete last night, but is part of this team and has been able to soak it all in as a 16-year-old. It's just neat to watch her and know what the future could potentially hold for her. She could be the bridge to the next group.
It's definitely so crazy. I mean, we've all worked so hard for this, and I'm just so happy to be here. And the experience was so amazing competing in qualifications. So I'm very excited and can't wait to do more.
So cute. She's super cute. And her parents were really excited too. I love it when the parents can't watch. That's one of my favorite things when they're so emotional, because that's how I would be. They almost can't watch as their daughters perform. And it was the same for the men too on Tuesday night. And same thing in the swimming pool. You've got families that are there and some of the parents just can't even bear to watch especially with the sprints, when the races go so quickly. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So what did lead to their success getting back on top of the podium in Paris?
Honestly, I think the biggest thing is just understanding each other as teammates and just going out there and doing what we know we can. And like she was saying, the repetitions, the practice, everything that we've done, we just trusted that. And now, you know, this is a medal of hard work and dedication. And this redemption tour was definitely golden, I can say. I mean, I feel like we came together today as a team really well, and we picked each other up, lifted each other up when we needed it. So it just felt amazing to be back out here, and this medal is absolutely insane. I literally cannot stop smiling, but yeah, it was so fun, and I'm so happy right now.
Jordan Chiles and Suni Lee, and then Jade Carey, who actually wasn't feeling well. So both she and her dad, who's her coach, they, after the qualifying, where she had a couple falls in floor exercise, which is the event that she won gold in Tokyo, she posted online that she wasn't feeling well. And so she was out there participating only in vault, but then helping just to encourage and support her teammates. And she has the silver from the team competition in Tokyo, as well as a gold from the vault, from the floor exercise. But to do this with her teammates and get back to the top, that was special.
This means everything to me. I'm super lucky to be a part of this team, and we all worked so hard, and I'm just so proud of everyone who gave it their all today.
I mean, these women, these young women, have become household names. And Simone Biles is certainly the one that's most recognizable around the globe. But all of them are so beloved, and they just had the USA chants and the incredible cheers. In fact, some of their competitors even cheering for Simone, I think, just kind of knowing what she's been through, and maybe some of them can identify with what happened to her in the last Olympics going back to Tokyo. Now, Simone's legacy is not yet set. There's no doubt going to be more to it. And as I say, I have not heard her utter the R word or talk about retirement, but people are starting to ask her at 27 years old, now married and with a dog, having come back and competed again in these Olympics. What about her legacy in the sport of gymnastics?
Now you have 38 World and Olympic medals, which is more than any of the men's team combined. And so I wonder, what does that mean to you, and what about the legacy that you're leaving on the sport?
Honestly, I would have had to Google that, so I'm not really sure. I don't keep count. I don't keep stats. I just go out here and do what I'm supposed to, and I'm doing what I love and enjoying it. So that's really all that matters to me. Yes, it's amazing now that I hear it, but I don't think I'll truly understand the depth of it until I walk away from the sport. So you never know, because I mean, we still have a couple more competitions here, so I'm trying to focus on that, and so we'll just have to see.
I mean, I love that perspective. I never think about that. I'm not thinking about numbers. What I'm doing is just trying to get back to who I wanted to be in Tokyo, who I've trained so hard to be. And something else, too, and they mentioned this after the fact, that she did have a therapy session on Tuesday morning to try to remain as calm and as mentally focused as possible. That's what she said. And to think about, again, what she said when she bowed out of Tokyo, and the fact that it was her mental health, and that became such a talking point, and the things that people said about her, really unconscionable. Not that I should expect anything different from social media, but I'm glad that she doesn't pay attention to it. Even her husband has indicated that he was blown away. He had no idea what it was like to walk in her shoes until they were in a serious relationship. So yeah, she wanted to make sure that she was focused and she was calm and she was at peace. And they all encouraged each other. So Suni Lee, she was dealing with some nerves on Monday night, and she turned to her teammates to kind of help her for guidance. And apparently they stayed up talking late on Monday night in the Olympic Village. I guess when you can't sleep on the cardboard beds. No, I'm just kidding. They were together and encouraging each other. And having been through this before, different form in Tokyo, but they've also trained together for a long time. They've competed against each other for years, right, on their way to elite gymnastics. And so they all know each other really well. And I'm so happy for them and proud for them. And yeah, Simone is the face. She's really the face of the sport. And in some ways, she's the face of the Olympics. But this is a team competition, and it was a really neat experience to watch them as a team, kind of like the men, though the men were a surprise. But by the way, the men were watching at a party with a bunch of other American fans there in Paris, and Steven Nedorosic is front and center. He's wearing his medal along with the other guys, and he's getting all kinds of interview requests now. In fact, I just saw that he's going to be, he and some of his family and friends are getting interviewed on Fox News on Wednesday morning. And then also he was doing an appearance on the Today Show just because the Nedorosic memes, his glasses, they're everywhere now. And he did the one event, but he nailed it. And now people are talking about him everywhere.
I think they're awesome. representing people that wear glasses well.
But you take them off just before you go on.
Yeah, how does that work?
And what do you see out there in the audience? Is it clear or not?
It's not necessarily clear, but the thing about pommel horses, if I keep them on, they're going to fly somewhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, when I go up on the pommel horse, it's all about feeling the equipment. I don't even really see when I'm doing my gymnastics. It's all in the hands. I can feel everything.
Muscle memory.
He can't see, bro.
Well, he doesn't need to see the fans. Why does he need to see the fans? He can put his glasses on and he can see them after he's done.
I mean, I guess if you just need to see the horse in front of you and
Well, and he said it's mostly feel that you're not really looking at it. And I can imagine because you're turning, you're spinning. In some cases, it's one hand and then the other. Sometimes they do those scissor kicks, which he wasn't part of his routine. But you're
just an absolute
legend. I mean,
legend.
If you're actually going by your eyes, I can imagine that you might get a little bit dizzy.
Just an absolute legend.
Yes, for one event.
For one event. It's incredible. You get called in as a specialist. You can't see. You're absolutely jacked. You look like Clark Kent, and you actually pull it out like Superman to get the team a bronze medal. What a story for this kid. And also, my brother went to Penn State, so we are.
Oh, there you go. Yep, he's a star at Penn State. And now we'll see whether or not this Steven Nedorosic wave of popularity continues. But I could see him being one of those kind of quirky memories of this particular Olympics, which is it's great. It's what these games are for. Hey, by the way, one of the events that has been in jeopardy since the start of the games is now underway. We'll explain coming up and a couple of other cool highlights from what's happened so far in Paris. USA, USA. It's a Wednesday morning. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Wembanyama behind the three. It's good. Seven on the shot clock. Wembanyama catches underneath the hoop. Scores, and he is fouled. Got Wembanyama doesn't hesitate. Dead three. It's good. Victor Wembanyama gives France the 6-point lead.
Here's Amy Lawrence.
The legend of Wemby grows. Man, if you did not see the end of the game between France and Japan, it went into overtime as a dramatic finish to regulation before they got into overtime. A 4-point play by France that got them into OT, and then Wemby took over. An 8-0 run. 8 points by Wembanyama, including a big three. And so it was awesome to watch. The crowd gets really excited, as you can imagine, because it's his home court. So Wembanyama and the French team, they beat Japan in overtime. And right now, I think they're the standard bearers for the French there in Paris. And just the idea that they could win this gold. Of course, they would have to go through the American team potentially. And they've got South Sudan on tap next. And that comes up later on today. Now remember, South Sudan actually pushed the Americans. Were they still in Abu Dhabi there, or were they in London? I can't remember where. In one of their run-ups to these Olympics, they actually battled back and forth, and it wasn't until LeBron James helped them snatch victory from the jaws of defeat. Not that it would have mattered, but still, South Sudan? I'll be honest, I didn't know there was a North Sudan. I just thought it was one country that battled for these Olympic spots. And so here they go, matching up with them again. And I kind of like the idea of the Americans, with all their NBA all-stars and guys who've played a lot of years, who had one run against this team, so they're at least familiar with what they're going to see. And yeah, looking forward to that game coming up. And Steve Kerr, no doubt, is looking for something different from the team.
They came within one shot of beating us, so I'm really glad that we played them so we could feel, you know, their speed and their three-point shooting ability and feel how good they are. And I think we'll be much better prepared tomorrow.
We have appropriate fear of everybody. Like, it's the exhibition schedule was great because you got to figure out where we need to get better and also feel the force of teams that are coming trying to beat us, because they're a very high-octane offense. They can spread the floor, shoot a lot of threes. They have athleticism. So you just got to be mindful of how to guard them. It's totally different than Serbia. Like I said, it's appropriate fear of we're beatable if we don't play our game. But if we do, we have a lot of confidence we can beat everybody.
So Steph Curry and Steve Kerr And I think that that's a good way to put it. It's more of a respect and an awe than it is, well, respect, than it is a fear necessarily, but just a healthy understanding that if you let your guard down, you could very well be on the wrong end of things. And yeah, you don't have to think back that much farther than a week and a half ago when they nearly lost to South Sudan. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Looking forward to men's basketball, women's basketball again too. But how about men's soccer? Have you seen this? This drives me nuts. I mean, I'm happy for the Americans who have never won a medal in men's soccer in the modern Olympic era. How about that? The women's team, obviously highly decorated. They have the best of the best that our nation has to offer. This men's tournament is mostly under 23. So it's considered a U23 type of a tournament. So we're not talking about pro athletes. Most of these guys don't have their massive contracts to play in the Euros or anywhere else. This is a largely youth team, so young Americans. However, they are allowed to have, I think each nation's allowed to have three guys that are over 23. So that's the rule. Anyway, here are these Americans who hadn't qualified for the Olympics essentially since these guys were, before these guys were born, right? No, wait. Haven't made the knockout stage since before these guys were born, right? So they haven't been to the quarterfinals and the knockout stage of the Olympics since 2000. So a lot of these guys weren't even on the planet. A handful of them were, but these guys were maybe not even a thought at that point. And now they are, well, they're catching teams by surprise, but they're also finding this momentum, which is incredible. So they've never won, again, never won a medal in men's soccer in the modern Olympics, and they're just a couple of wins away. But this is already a huge victory for them to make the knockout stage. Now, contrast that with our national team that is supposed to be competing in the World Cup in 2 years, and it still doesn't have a coach. Why? Are they hoping to poach the coach? Are they hoping to poach the coach from this U23 team? Oh my gosh, this drives me crazy, but also what a strange dichotomy. The marquee event for men's soccer is the World Cup. It's landing here in America, well, in North America, but all the biggest events will take place in the United States in 2 years. The national team just fired its coach, still doesn't have one. It's been weeks, like weeks. What do you think they're doing? Consulting the March Madness Selection Committee? What are they doing?
Yeah, I mean, it's feels like it's the same song and dance with U.S. soccer. I mean, this is why, yeah. I feel as though this is why the sport can't advance much further. I mean, it's just, there's just a lot of mediocrity from the head at U.S. soccer. Mm, that's
leadership.
That's really the crux of it. And that's, yes, it trickles down like that. And it's unfortunate because it's such a beautiful game.
Yeah. So I just think it's just strange to even think about. The Olympics, they're kind of an afterthought with men's soccer. And here's this team that has not only qualified for the first time in a decade, but is also into the knockout stage, the quarterfinals, headed to France. So they don't play, headed to Paris. They don't play in Paris until they get to the knockout stage. And now they're headed to Paris and the bright lights, big city, if you will.
Big stadium too.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm excited about that and we'll definitely want to watch them. Something else I wanted to update though, before we get to our break, you may have heard me talking about the fact that the River Seine was so polluted. The water quality was so bad with E. coli and other bacteria. Mm. And they blamed the rain.
Yummy.
They blamed heavy rains going back to the Friday of the Olympic ceremonies. And so they have had to postpone their triathlon and postpone all the training, you know, to allow these athletes to get into the water, to allow these athletes to try to, you know, test the Seine, the current and all that jazz. And they couldn't. They had to postpone all of that. But on Wednesday morning, the triathlons did get underway. So the women got into the river. They say the water quality is passable now?
Did anybody passable? Come out of the water with a third arm by chance?
I mean, I could imagine they're doing everything they possibly can to test the water like every 10 minutes.
I sure hope so.
But yeah, so they have tried to clean up this river in the past. It's really not an Olympics problem. That's the deal. But the organizers did say that the most recent test of the water on Wednesday morning showed compliance with quality standards. But they were also getting rain.
Oh, that's not good.
So what if that changed things? Yeah, and they will readily admit they actually have infectious disease specialists on hand. Doesn't that make you nervous if you're an athlete and you're getting in water where they are testing for infectious diseases?
That's why I pick sports that were above land.
I do love to swim, but you shouldn't have to worry about infectious diseases when you're competing in the Olympics.
No, not while you're competing in the Olympics. If you're swimming in the East River, perhaps, but not in the Olympics, that should not be a worry.
So anyway, they say it's always worse when there are heavier rainfalls, and that's where the E. coli and stuff comes from. So yeah, they were underway. They were able to, I know it's gross.
And stuff. Is that the official word from the IOC?
I mean, what else do you call the infectious disease stuff? It's stuff. It sticks to you. So anyway, they're underway. So we're thinking about the athletes in the water for sure. Thankfully, it's a relatively short period of time in the water. One more thing, and I have to tell you this because this is amazing. I just saw it on USA. Ryan Murphy, who is a backstroker for Team USA, he's in one of the heats that's taking place right now. This is live going on in Paris at this moment. I just saw this and have to share it with you. I'm sure it's going to hit social media. His partner, either his wife or his girlfriend, I'm not sure which one, held up a sign that said, "It's a girl, Ryan." Oh my gosh, it's a girl. So he just found out that his, we'll say wife, but his partner is having a baby girl. And the emotion on his face when he saw the sign, oh, that was awesome. So that was before the race started, but they just had that happen in the arena just a few minutes ago. Isn't that amazing? Well, I mean, talk about trying to throw your guy off his game, though. Maybe that gives him a little extra juice. Because he's going to be a girl dad.
Dang it. You took the words right out of my mouth.
Oh, sorry. Pretty neat. So congratulations to Ryan Murphy and his partner, his wife, on having a baby girl in the very near future. And right now he's in the water. So that's awesome. It's a girl, Ryan. The sign said, "It's a girl, Ryan."
Swim, Ryan. Swim. You've got a baby girl on the way.
Oh, that's awesome. Online at A-Law Radio. Also on our Facebook page. My stomach is growling. Sorry about that. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Here's our latest sports update. And here's Marco Belletti.
First pitch on the way. Machado swings, hits it in the air, deep to left field. Teoscar Hernandez will watch, and it's going to go! A long home run for Machado, his second of the night. Here's the pitch. Merrill swings, hits it in the air, deep to right field. Paez is back. He is at the wall. It's going to go! Here's the pitch on the way. Solano swings, hits a ground ball past the dive of Hernandez, down the left field line to win it. Kim scores, Solano walks it off, and the Padres come back from a 5-0 deficit to beat the Dodgers in 10.
Here's Amy Lawrence.
It was quite a dramatic rally for the Padres, a sold-out crowd, nearly 48,000 at Petco Park with the Dodgers on hand, and they did rally from a 5-0 deficit. Manny Machado helping to force the extra innings and a bases-loaded hit there for the walk-off in the 10th. That's the call on Padres Radio. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We had a chance to catch up with Maury Brown of Forbes. He's based in Portland, Oregon, and joined us in the wake of the trade deadline. Both the Padres and the Dodgers were active. Wanted to bring back part of that for our early morning audience, and we'll pick it up at the point where I ask him his reaction to the Dodgers getting Jack Flaherty, even though there were other teams like the Yankees who were in the mix.
Well, I think the thing that everybody needs to think about on this was the thing with the Yankees was a lot closer than I think people gave credit for. The only thing that stopped them from making it happen in New York was I think there was concerns with his back. Now, nobody's going to talk about it, but it sounds like they backed out at pretty much the 11th hour, which opened up the door for the Dodgers. If the Dodgers had done nothing, it would have been like, okay, what's going on? You guys have, once again, will be like an NLDS loser, you know, losing the first round. And that is something that has just plagued them. I mean, they've run ramshot in the National League multiple years in a row. And with 2020, the exception, they just seem to get hit on the chin once the playoffs hit. Now, look, I understand the playoffs add a lot of the idea that in a short series, anything can happen. It just really opens things up. But still, a team that spends that much, a team that has been that dominant, should probably do better. So, look, I think it's good. You know, I mean, there are some questions. You know, Clayton Kershaw came back, and that's, you know, something. Although he has, of course, been questionable, and he's not exactly young anymore. So, yes, I think they needed to do something.
The Padres were able to find themselves a new closer, and they bring in Tanner Scott, maybe the best reliever that was available on the market. How great is the gap between the Dodgers and the Padres?
The biggest issue with that whole design was they really needed help in the front of the rotation, and the rotation needed help. I mean, yes, it's great additions to their bullpen. But I guess if you're going to go ahead and say, well, you know, we can go ahead and augment and stretch our bullpen out with these additions, okay. But I was surprised. I thought maybe they would go for somebody on the front line. They didn't. They went into the reliever market, which was really, the market was exceptionally high for relievers this year. And so I was kind of surprised about that. I mean, they traded quite a bit away. So I guess it'll be interesting to see how they balance that out. Did they do well enough to just solidify second place? Maybe.
Right now, they've won 8 of their last 10, including extra inning victory over the Dodgers in front of a sold-out crowd tonight. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, looking at the baseball trade deadline with Maury Brown, who is a senior contributor for Forbes. It's kind of interesting to think about the last week and what the Tampa Bay Rays have done. And at the point at which they traded Randy Arozarena to the Mariners, they were only one game above 500 and yet still very much in that wild card mix that you talked about at the start. Why do you think they went ahead and just dealt all these pieces?
Yeah, and this is the question. Anybody that would look at it, basically the way that you framed it, Amy, I think that you look at it and you go, what is going on? You guys are right there, which again speaks to how wide open the wild card has made the playoffs. But I can't argue with the fact that they have been in this thing and been competitive largely since 2006, doing it on a method of going through and retooling. And they're able to do and remain competitive along the way. Now, look, they moved a lot. I was surprised. You mentioned Randy Arozarena, Jason Adams, Eflin. I mean, you go through and you say, well, that's quite a bit that you're offloading. But they do really believe in the prospects that they got back. And the bad thing about that, Amy, is you can't really tell. You know, you're never really going to know until next season how that's going to pan out and what they're going to do in the offseason. But I will say this, until they prove people wrong, I mean, they've largely been competitive in a hyper-competitive division for a long time. I mean, it's not for the fact that the Orioles finally, you know, got around to being competitive after being in abysmal shape for the better part of over a decade. Then I would say it's hard to argue with them. So I guess we'll wait and see. Yeah, I mean, if you're a Rays fan, you're going, you guys are right there. You know, you're looking at a small window to get into the wild card. But then it's harder to leap over some people or some teams in the middle of this thing.
And on the heels of that, they get the government backing they need for a big stadium and to stay put there in the area.
When the $1 billion arrive, it's one of those things. You know, they do get the backing. The Rays have been trying for a long time. And this is something, Amy, that I think gets largely lost. You know, it took the Marlins 20 years. It took the Twins about 20 years. It's taken the A's and the Rays longer. And it is, I think, a testament to the idea that The public's not really keen on trying to get into supporting private industry that much anymore. I think they're a lot more educated than they used to be. That said, I have said repeatedly, and in speak, 5 years ago, I spoke to Rob Manfred, and he opened up the door to the idea of expansion. He's not going to get it on his watch. He's going to set it up for whoever is the next commissioner if he follows through with his retirement plan. And so that's a big deal. I mean, when we go to 32 teams, I think that that's a significant thing. And the A's and the Rays are those linchpins. Until those two are sorted out, expansion doesn't happen. And given the fact that there will be a $2 billion, potentially more, expansion fee for each of the two teams, there are 30 teams right now in Major League Baseball with 4 billion reasons to try and get the A's and Rays over the finish line.
That's a lot of money. It's a lot of money for them to split up. And so no doubt they have an interest in expanding. But I like what he had to say, and he talked about it with Rob Manfred, that they've got to fix the A's situation, whether it's Vegas or somewhere else. And they've got to get the Rays set. But this deal, the stadium deal, would keep them in place for 30 years at least. So I guess there's hope. But it's weird, right, considering what the Rays did. It's not supposed to be signaling a white flag and a surrender. It's supposed to be about building for the future. But, man, how many times do fans want to go through that? More in that conversation with Maury on our podcast. We talked Yankees and Orioles and AL East race. We looked at the Kansas City Royals and the surprise that they are. And also, this might be my favorite part, that we talked about the Pirates and how they were buyers at the deadline. Not just that, but what to do with Paul Skeens, who right now is about the hottest thing in baseball, unless you're Japanese and you love Shohei Ohtani. Well, I think Ohtani's still big. It's just Paul Skeens is like new and fresh, and he's
judgy.
Okay, but we've seen this before. Right, I'm just saying it's new and fresh, and it's something different for 2024. That's Paul Skeens. Plus, what did the little fifth grader tell us? His mustache. And Livy Dunn! All right, enjoy your Olympics today. Enjoy your hump day. We're back tonight. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Boom!
In case we haven't met, I'm Dino Colombo. I represent people hurt by a truck. It's what we do every day. We answer the question, why did this terrible collision happen? Hurt by a truck? Call Colombo Law.